Hello, hello to all my fantastic radio listeners out there. I hope your day is full of energy, positive vibes, and good health. Welcome to Simply Healthy Talk Show with producer Auntie K, right here on Word SBC 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Bridget Bell Bastian, aka Lady B. It's a pleasure to have you join us today. And today, I have a very nice topic to discuss with you all today, or to inform you about, and it's entitled Lady Care. Now, right away, this sounds like we're talking specifically to the ladies, but men, you can, you know, you can listen too. And I have a guest in here who's going to tell us a little bit more about this lady care, and we're going to ask her to introduce herself right now. Tell us what you do, who you are, you know, stuff like that.
I am pleased to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thanks for coming.
My name is Dr. Vanessa Miller.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm an obstetrician and gynecologist.
All right. That's it? That's all you have for us? Nothing else? Nothing else we need to know about you? Okay, y'all gonna hear from her a little bit more. She has a lot more to say. So let's jump right into this, Miss Miller.
Awesome.
What is a gynecologist? Let's start there.
A gynecologist is a women's health physician. Mm-hmm. So she takes care of adolescent girls all the way up to menopausal women.
Oh.
And the obstetrician, on the other hand, is someone who tackles pregnancy.
Okay.
So anybody in the reproductive years mm-hmm. will need an obstetrician.
Okay. So in the when I hear gynecologist, the only thing I think about is a pap smear. You know? I know there are a lot more things than just a pap smear.
Sure.
So what are some of the most common health concerns you see often in your career?
A lot of people come in with irregular bleeding.
Okay.
Abnormal menstrual cycles.
Yes, we can talk about that too.
Pelvic pain.
Mm-hmm.
Fibroids.
Oh, yeah.
Very common.
Very common.
Abnormal pap smears. Infertility. There's a wide range. Yes.
Okay.
There's a wide range.
Hmm. So let me see which one we're going to start with today. Let's talk about the pap smears. It's one of the more common ones that we know about.
Yes. So the pap smear is an abbreviation for Papa Nicolau smear. Papa Nicolau.
Okay, yeah, that.
That's the person who discovered the science of taking a scraping from the cervix, looking at it under the microscope, and being able to predict whether it's abnormal or normal. So we recommend screening pap smear to look for the presence or absence of precancerous changes or cancer of the cervix.
Right.
And we recommend that women have a pap smear starting at age 21.
21. Okay, I was going to ask that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then every 3 to 5 years, depending on how your pap smear goes. And there are different guidelines depending on whether you have human papillomavirus positive, mm-hmm. and we can talk about that if you want,
mm-hmm.
Or whether you're negative for human papillomavirus. And, and so that will help to streamline which.
So you say every 3 to 5 years is this if you have a regular situation, regular normal pap smears every 3 to 5, but if you have a situation, it will be
much more frequent, yes.
All right. Sounds good. So let's talk about, what's the other word you just said just now, the other thing?
Human papillomavirus.
Yeah, that. Let's talk about that.
So human papillomavirus is a set of viruses. There are about 200 subtypes, probably.
200?
Yeah.
Okay.
Approximately.
All right.
And the ones that we concern ourselves with in gynecology can be broken down into two classes, mm-hmm. benign
mm-hmm.
or low risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then the high-risk HPV.
Oh.
So the low-risk HPVs are those that are associated with warts. You may have warts on your hand, warts on your feet, warts on the genital area.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yes. And those are normally not considered malignant, not problematic, except for the fact that they can cause cosmetic problems.
Mm-hmm.
They can be transmitted to others, so they're sexually transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
And human papillomavirus is transmitted with close, intimate contact, skin-to-skin contact.
All right.
And the high-risk HPV types, particularly 16 and 18, are the ones that cause concern with your pap smear.
Oh.
HPV can cause changes in the cells of the cervix that can, if persistent, mm-hmm. turn into cervical cancer. And that's why it's important to follow up when you get your pap smear, know what your result is,
right.
and know what your follow-up should be. How soon or how often mm-hmm. does your gynecologist want you to come back?
Right.
Because cervical cancer, in my estimation, is something that really should never, 95% of the time should never occur.
Really?
If you're getting your pap smears, yes. If you're doing your regular pap smears, if you're taking the necessary precautions, then pap smears are simply unacceptable in the modern gynecology world that we're living in. That's not to say that it's not common, because mm-hmm. it is quite common.
The cervical, yes. Okay.
Particularly now after the pandemic.
Right.
We're seeing, I was talking to one of our GYN oncologists, Dr. Butler, mm-hmm. and he's saying he's seeing a lot more female cancers since the pandemic.
Wow. Are there symptoms or anything that one could look for?
Yes, there are symptoms. And they're not specific.
Mm-hmm.
They may include unusual vaginal discharge.
Okay.
They may include unusual vaginal bleeding. Mm-hmm. And if it's advanced, you may have pain.
Hmm. So I know fibroids is an issue too. That because the things you described just now, are they similar to if you had a fibroid situation, the bleeding and all that?
So the bleeding from fibroids is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, as I said, it's the symptoms are not specific to cervical cancer. But for fibroids, for instance, you may have pressure symptoms.
Okay.
Because of the size or the position of the fibroid.
Mm-hmm.
You would have very heavy bleeding with fibroids. But usually the bleeding is at the time when you expect a period. Whereas
okay.
with cervical cancer, it's
any,
yes,
okay.
it can be at any time.
Okay. Makes sense. So what are the treatment options then for those kinds of diseases? Or
for cervical cancer, let's talk about precancer before we talk about
pre-cancer.
Cancer.
Okay.
So precancer is cervical intraepithelial neoplasia or abnormal cells.
How did
found.
You just say that word? Say that again. How?
Cervical
uh-huh.
intraepithelial neoplasia.
Mercy.
That just means abnormal cells found on your pap smear.
Okay.
Okay. And these abnormal cells can revert to normal
mm-hmm.
or they can progress over a period of time and
oh.
become cervical cancer.
Oh.
If they are untreated
right.
and if the person has immune deficiency
mm-hmm.
or if they develop sexually transmitted infections,
mm-hmm.
there is greater likelihood that those precancerous cells can progress to cancer.
Oh.
So healthy lifestyles
yes.
are very important for people with abnormal pap smears.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep your immune system healthy.
Yes.
People who also are abstinent
mm-hmm.
or mutually monogamous,
mm-hmm.
meaning that you have only one partner and your partner has only one partner.
Yeah.
You have already reduced
right.
your risk
mm-hmm.
of developing cervical
mm-hmm.
cancer. So the treatment for precancerous lesions, we can either freeze them, something called cryotherapy. Cryo
okay.
means freeze.
Okay.
So we can freeze them. That's something that's done in the office.
Oh.
They can be removed with what's called a LEAP. It's a hot wire.
Oh.
That can be done under local anesthetic. And so, again, that can be done in the office.
Okay. So, Sister Miller, we're going to have to take a short break, right?
Sure.
I'm going to have to try and pronounce some of them words during the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Calling everyone who likes food. Calling everyone who likes food. I knew that would have gotten your attention. Do you know that you don't have to cook fancy or complicated masterpieces? Just good food from fresh ingredients. And here's the catch. You can do it for under $20. Yes, you heard right. You can eat plenty healthy for under $20. Stay locked into Word SBC 88.3 FM every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 o'clock to 3:05 and hear what recipe I'll be sharing with you. I'm your foodie and your host, Auntie Kay. And together, let's eat plenty but healthy for under 20.
Welcome back to Simply Healthy right here on Word SBC 88.3 FM. I'm in studio with Dr. Vanessa Miller, who's giving me some tongue-tying words, and I did try during the break. I did not get it. So let's continue on with our, you know, lady care topic, Ms. Miller, Dr. Miller.
Yes, thank you. So we were talking about treatments for precancerous lesions, and the last thing we're talking about is something called a LEAP, mm-hmm. which is where we do an excisional procedure to remove the abnormal cells. Ooh. And again, this is something that can be done under local anesthesia in office. It's not something that requires general anesthesia, and so that's why we feel comfortable doing it in the office. Anyway, for cancer, mm-hmm. that requires evaluation by a GYN oncologist, because you want to know what stage the cancer is at. Mm-hmm. That will determine whether you need other things besides surgery, like chemotherapy, radiation, mm-hmm. those types of things. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that you get the correct type of treatment when you're talking about malignancy. Hysterectomy.
Ooh, I was just going to ask that question.
Yeah, is often recommended. Now, if this is a person who wants to have children and they have an early stage cancer, cervical cone biopsy, where they put someone under anesthesia and take a cone-shaped biopsy of the area, removing what appears to be the abnormal cells, can be something that will spare their fertility, allow them the ability to have children.
So is this like a partial hysterectomy?
It's not a hysterectomy at all. It's just taking out a part of the cervix. Okay. The problem with that, though, is that once you get pregnant now, the cervix has been weakened because you did that surgery on it. And so you have to be very careful. Your doctor will have to be very careful to make sure you don't need some kind of a cerclage or something to help you maintain that pregnancy. So, and that's not an option for everyone.
Right.
Maybe if you're a very low stage, very low grade cancer, then your doctor may allow you to take that option. But cancer is something very serious.
Yes,
we take it very seriously because it can be life-threatening. And so you want to make sure that you follow your doctor's recommendations.
So when we talk about the partial hysterectomy, what exactly is removed?
So partial hysterectomy is really a layman's term, and it may mean different things to different people. What we talk about in gynecology is a total hysterectomy that can be done through the abdomen. So that's a total abdominal hysterectomy. Hysterectomy is uterus, ectomy, removal, hysterectomy. So you're removing the uterus. Now, when most people talk about a complete hysterectomy, they think about taking out the ovaries and the fallopian tubes as well as the uterus. That is a hysterectomy, but removing the tubes is a salpingectomy, and removing the ovaries is a oophorectomy.
Oh my. I need a dictionary.
So it really depends on what is the reason for removing the uterus, whether your doctor will recommend removing the fallopian tubes as well as the ovaries.
So if cysts are seen on your ovaries, is it recommended to take them out, or I guess it depends on how far in it is or whatever?
Well, it depends on a couple of things. It depends on whether the cyst looks like it's problematic.
Right.
Is it a simple cyst? Is it a complex cyst with a lot of ugly looking stuff that makes us think it might be cancer or might turn into cancer? All of those things go into the decision as to whether you recommend it to remove it. A lot of benign cysts, for example, when a woman ovulates every month, she's forming cysts every single month.
Yes.
And so benign cysts are very common in the ovaries.
Okay. All right.
And so you naturally will give them a six-week trial and see. Come back in 6 weeks and let's see when you're in a different part of your cycle, whether that cyst persists or not.
Okay.
If it comes along with severe pain, those kinds of things, then, you know, we want to talk about other options as well.
Okay. I've heard a lot about hormone therapy. Are there risks? Would you recommend this, or does it depend on the type, situation, or the person?
Okay, so let's say, for instance, you have something called polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Oh, there she goes again.
PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. This is a disorder of hormones that are produced by the ovaries and the adrenal gland.
Okay.
And in this syndrome, you have the potential for infertility. Mm-hmm. Usually the person is overweight, has irregular periods, may have some hairiness, like too much hair or over the lips, like a mustache, or maybe sideburns, or maybe on the chest.
Yeah.
So it's an imbalance of hormones, and it's generally also linked with prediabetes or the predisposition to develop diabetes. So polycystic ovarian syndrome is something that you want to treat hormonally in order to get the hormones back into balance to help to both improve fertility, but also improve the regularity of your menstrual cycles and to reduce the risk of endometrial cancer. Because if the lining of the uterus does not shed as it normally should once a month. Generally, we say you should have a period at least every 3 months to reduce the risk of that lining turning into precancerous lesions and then having the possibility of turning into endometrial cancer.
Okay.
So if you use some hormones, some progesterone, it will stabilize that endometrial lining and much reduce the risk of progressing to endometrial cancer. But hormone therapy, as we think about it, in general use, is more likely for birth control. So oral contraceptive pills, for instance, have progesterone and estrogen. Or you may have the shot, which is only progesterone. Or you may have the intrauterine device, which again has a lot of progesterones, different types. And then hormones can also be used for menopausal treatment. So symptoms of menopause can lead a person to come to their gynecologist. And if those symptoms suggest that you have insufficient estrogen, for instance, vaginal dryness is one of the symptoms of low estrogen. And so we may recommend increasing your estrogen and also balancing that off with progesterone, because it's not recommended that you take estrogen alone after a certain age, because it promotes the thickening of the endometrial stripe or lining and can turn into precancerous and cancer cells.
I was going to ask about that. Like persons who have had cancer, I don't think it's recommended that they take those kinds of things.
That's correct.
So they would have to find another avenue to get this estrogen and all that stuff.
Like,
what would they do? I don't know. Is there any other supplements, any, I guess, diet change or something?
There are supplements that have a similar portfolio to the hormonal therapies. For example, if you're talking about estrogen, things like sweet potato and soy products have something called isoflavones.
Okay, she's going with the big words again. And while I try to get this big word, I'm going to take a break. So we will be right back.
Greetings, my name is Pastor Samuel Reyes. You are listening to Word SBC 88.3 FM, a place for you and your family to be uplifted by the spirit and joy of God.
Welcome back to Simply Healthy right here on Word SBC 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Lady B. And I'm in studio with Dr. Vanessa Miller, and she's still giving me some tongue-tying words, guys. So we're going to finish off. We were talking about estrogen, right?
Yes, we were talking about alternative sources of estrogen, and just before the break, we were saying that soy products such as tofu or organic soy milk, edamame, beans, these can be sweet potatoes as well. These can be adequate sources of estrogenic activity to support those needs in the body.
Okay, sounds good. There was always one thing I wanted to ask about. And this is, it's the pelvic floor exercise or health. You know, like what is that? What how do you strengthen your pelvic?
Okay, so the pelvic floor becomes important when people are talking about pregnancy, being able to carry babies through pregnancy, also aging.
Okay.
During aging, our pelvic floor muscles may become lax. And so it's important to know what are some things that I can do to strengthen those muscles. One of the things that we recommend to our clients is Kegel exercises.
Kegel.
K-E-G-E-L.
Okay, I think I said that one. Kegel, right? Okay.
And basically, it's something that you can do without anyone even knowing that you're doing it.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that. You can do it sitting down.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a type of physiotherapy for the pelvic floor. It allows you to contract those muscles, hold the contraction for a specified number of seconds, and then release. And do it repeatedly, just like an exercise, a normal exercise would.
So this is related to if you know, I need to get to the bathroom quickly to urinate, and for some reason I cannot hold it long enough to make it, those kind of exercises I would need to do.
Absolutely right. Those Kegel exercises are the ones that strengthen the bladder neck and allow you to be able to control the flow of your urine.
Oh, okay.
And so if you are... If you go to the bathroom and you try to urinate and you stop the flow of urine intentionally, then you're doing a Kegel exercise. And so that's how you will know that you're doing it properly. If you're able to stop in the middle of your flow of urine, that's the Kegel exercise that we recommend that you do to strengthen your pelvic floor muscles.
Oh, my. Okay. I think I'm going to test that out later. So now let's get into the pregnancy side of it, right? How can one prepare for pregnancy and what are the prenatal care that we should consider?
Okay, so preparing for pregnancy is very, very important because the more healthy the mother is during pregnancy, the less likely she is to have risks and the more likely she is to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby.
Wow.
When we take care of pregnant women, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we have two patients now, the mom as well as the fetus. So before becoming pregnant, you want to optimize your health as much as possible. If you have diabetes, make sure your diabetes is well under control. If you have high blood pressure, same thing. So you want to be as healthy as you possibly can. Get a good variety of healthy fruits and vegetables. Make sure you're getting your vitamins and minerals. So just optimize your health. And you can do that in conjunction with your healthcare provider and make sure that they are aware of your any medication that you're taking because if you're planning to become pregnant and there are medications that are contraindicated during pregnancy then we recommend that you stop those before you become pregnant. That way you reduce the risk of causing issues with the fetus. Prenatal care basically means what kinds of care are we giving to the mother to help make sure that she remains healthy and can have a healthy baby. And those are standardized. As early as 6 to 8 weeks, we recommend that you come in for your first prenatal care visit. You'll have an ultrasound that confirms that everything looks good. The pregnancy is inside the uterus, not in some other place, which it can happen.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Yes.
Like it's outside. Like, how does, how, I mean, I don't know if you know how that happens, right? But it's very interesting.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you locate the pregnancy that's it's intrauterine. Mm-hmm. And then there are some labs that we take to make sure that there are no infectious diseases going on that can cause problems with the pregnancy. Right. And genetic testing is important, okay. particularly at there are advanced age mm-hmm. Testing, for example, for Down syndrome. Mm. You want to make sure that you are after age 35, that you're testing to let the mother know if there is likelihood that she's bearing a child with Down syndrome. The tests have become so accurate now that they can tell you not just the probability that you are having a child with Down syndrome, but yes or no. Mm-hmm. And of course, some people want to know what sex the baby is yeah. or what gender the baby mm-hmm. is. And if there are inheritable diseases mm-hmm. in your family, mm-hmm. a lot of the times those can be tested for prior to delivery of the baby so that you can make the necessary preparation.
I imagine that. I think they say there's an age limit for you being more riskier when you're pregnant, but which is that before 30 or after 30 or before 40?
After 35, they've recognized that the slope of the graph for problems with the fetus mm-hmm. increases after age 35. Okay. It doesn't mean that you can't have a healthy baby. It just means that your risk of having some issue is increased.
So they would need more attention.
We consider them a high-risk pregnancy.
Hmm. Are there certain supplements that you prefer for a pregnant lady to take? Or
Certainly the normal vitamins, but folic acid or folate
mm-hmm.
is something that is recommended during pregnancy.
Okay.
There are also stuff like DHA, which is for the fetal brain. And so there are things that you can do to optimize the outcome of the pregnancy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Dr. Miller, we are almost at the end of our show, and I need you to give us a little take-home, you know, advice, both sides that you deal with.
Okay, so this will apply to either obstetrics or gynecology, and mm-hmm. that is to take good care of yourself.
Right.
If you're eating well, mm-hmm. exercising mm-hmm. regularly, getting adequate sleep.
Yes.
Doing the things that you know promote health and then completely avoiding those things which are destructive to health, mm-hmm. such as smoking, using alcoholic drinking, beverages, uh-huh. Those kinds mm-hmm. of things. If you are optimizing your health, then your chances of having complications, issues, disorders are much decreased. So I recommend that whether you're pregnant or not, mm-hmm. If you're a woman who is trying to achieve health and holistic health, mm-hmm. that you make sure that you know, for number one, what your numbers are, know what your ideal weight should be, know what your blood pressure is, know what your blood sugar is, mm-hmm. all those things. Know your family history.
Yes.
That's very important. And then take the necessary steps in. And lifestyle, I think, should be a lifelong pursuit. It's not something that you do just because you're pregnant and you want to have a healthy baby. Correct. But it's also for you.
Right.
Yeah. Take mm-hmm. care of you so that you'll be there to take care of others.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Vanessa Miller.
My pleasure.
Pleasure having you. Well, we are at the end of our show, and I just need to remind our listening audience of our airing times. They are Mondays from 9 to 9:30 a.m., 1 to 1:30 p.m., and 7:30 to 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 9 to 9:30 a.m., and then again on Friday from 3 to 3:30 p.m. Until next time, remember, God is love. Stay curious, stay informed, stay healthy and happy, and let's keep the conversations alive. I'm Bridget Bell Bastian, a.k.a. Lady B, for Word SBC 88.3 FM. Remember, guys, it's not complicated. It's simply healthy.
Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Proverbs 18:21. Are your words giving life today? You're listening to Word SBC 88.3 FM.